Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to talk today a little bit about Derech Gedilason and how it applies to the mitzvah of Lulav, how it applies to other mitzvahs, and take some kind of lessons for Sukkos out of this halacha as well. We find, just by way of introduction, we find three different brachos that are the brachos that we are used to saying throughout the year. One is a Birchas Hanenin, as we know, one is a Birchas HaShvach, and one is a Birchas HaMitzvah. Now, all three of these categories of brachos have very different rules. For example, Birchas Hanenin, as we know, you have to have the bracha recited before you get the hana. For example, the Gemara says in brachos, Kol Hanenem and Olav Hazeh B'la Bracha Ki Ilu Mal. Someone who goes and has hana without first reciting a bracha, it's as if you are mal, like you're over the Isra of Me'ilah, of stealing from Hekdish, of stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, when it comes to the first category of brachas, Birchas Hanenin, we assume the bracha has to be made before eating, before having the hana. We have the second category, which is a Birchas HaShvach. Now, Birchas HaShvach is the polar opposite. Birchas HaShvach has to be said after you get the Hana, after you get the incredible insight into the Bria that you are experiencing now. For example, you see lightning, you hear thunder, you experience an amazing sight like the Grand Canyon or something of that nature, you recite a Bracha, but you only recite the Bracha after you're nespoil, after you're very overtaken by the greatness of the Ribbono Shel Olam's world. That's the second kind of Bracha. Then the third Bracha is, as we know, a Birchas HaMitzvah. Now, Birchas HaMitzvah, the Gemara tells us clearly, Kol HaMitzvahs Kulam Mevarech Aleihem Over La'asiyasan. By a Birchas HaMitzvah also, you have to recite the bracha before performing the mitzvah. So in that respect, a Birchas HaMitzvah would be like a Birchas HaNenin and not like a Birchas HaShvach. The Ritva writes that why is it that we have to recite a bracha before performing a mitzvah? Says the Ritva, Kedei Sha'adam Yiskadei Shchila Bebrach. Number one, the idea is that a person should be Mekadesh himself by reciting a bracha, by saying the Shem Hashem, by invoking the presence of the Shechina before reciting the mitzvah, you are bringing a Kedusha into yourself. And number two, V'yigale v'yodia shehu oseh osa mipnei mitzvahs Hashem Yisbarach. We should make it clear, it should be obvious to anybody, to any innocent bystander, that we are doing this only because the Ribbono Shel Olam asks us to do it. Again, when we wash our hands for Netilas Yadayim, someone might think, maybe you have OCD. Maybe you like to have very clean hands. Maybe you're very careful to wash your hands 100 times a day. No, that's not the reason why we're washing our hands in Tilas Yadayim, even though it's a very nice reason. However, when we recite a bracha, the point is, says the Ritva, that we should show everybody that it's unequivocal. The reason why we are doing this activity now is only because the Ribbono Shel Olam asked us to do it, because we consider it to be a mitzvah. The Rishonim write, why is it that the Gemara uses such a strange terminology here? Kol HaMitzvahs Kulam Mevarech Aleihem Over La'asiyas. And what's over? And the Gemara there in Psachim is not sure what exactly does the word over even mean. Why don't you use the simple terminology of Kodem La'asiyas? And that's the easy way to say before. So the reason why the Rishonim say is because if it would have said Kodem, you would think as long as you do it at some point before the mitzvah, that's good enough. The Gemara specifically goes out of its way to say Over La'asiyas, and that you have to do it immediately before you perform the mitzvah. Over means right before, and not over the over, not any time with a time lapse in between the time that you recite the bracha and that they were going to do mitzvah. It's for this reason that we find in Shulchan Aruch in many different places that the halacha dictates that you have to be ready to do the mitzvah right when you perform the reciting of the bracha. For example, the Shulchan Aruch says in Uchas Birchas HaMazon, Simen Kuf Samach Zayin, the Mechaber writes that when you make the bracha on Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz, on the bread, you should be holding the bread in your hand. Why is that? What are you holding the bread? Because you should be ready to eat the bread. You shouldn't have the bracha recited way before. You should have the bracha recited immediately preceding the mitzvah or the activity that you're about to do. Similarly, in Hilchos Tefillin, Simen Chaf Hei, what does it say? When you put on the shalyad, you cannot recite the bracha while you're unwrapping the shalyad, or while the shalyad is still in the tefillin bag. You have to first unwrap the shalyad. The Shulchan Aruch says you have to even put it on your arm and get ready to tighten it, and only then do you recite the bracha. Why? Because over the asiyasan means you have to recite it right before you perform the mitzvah. You cannot be too much in advance of the performance of a mitzvah. By Hilchos Dalet Minim, it says you have to, you know, some people start making the bracha while they don't yet have the lulav and esrog in their hands. They're still unpacking the lulav and esrog. They're still getting the hadassim and aravos together. That's not supposed to be done, as we find in Shulchan Aruch Simen Taf Reish Nun Aleph. And similarly in Hilchos Tzitzis, which is a mistake that many people make, when you put on the talis, it says you're supposed to make the bracha right before doing the atifa, which means you're supposed to hold it up above your head, you're supposed to hold it up behind your back, and then you recite the bracha, and right away you do the atifa over your head. You should not recite the bracha while the talis is still on the table, or while the talis is still in the tefillin bag, because that would be over to over. That would not be close enough to the performance of the mitzvah. That would constitute a hefsik, that would constitute a break in between the reciting of the bracha and the performance of the mitzvah. So the problem is the famous kasha of Tosus and Sukkah daf lametes is if we assume that you always have to recite a bracha over lasiyasan, you're going to be faced with a major problem when you come to the mitzvah of dalad minim. Why is that? Because by the mitzvah of dalad minim, what does the Gemara say? Mida'ag be nafik be. What is the real mitzvah? What do I have to do in order to perform my mitzvah of dalad minim on Sukkot? Do I have to shake it all around? No. All I have to do really to perform my mitzvah d'oraisa is pick it up. And once you pick it up, that's good enough. So ask Tosis, you have a major problem. What are you going to do if I pick it up and then recite the bracha? I was already mekayim the mitzvah. It's too late. You always have to make the bracha over lasiyasan. If I don't pick it up, then it's over the over. The same way we find by the tefillin. Tefillin has to be ready to go on your arm. Or the bread has to be in your hands ready to go. The tzitzis have to be in your hands when you're making the bracha. So then how are you going to have that over lasiyasan of the bracha by dalad minim, if in fact there's no way to do it? Mida'ag vei nafik bei. If I'm going to pick it up, I'm mekayem my mitzvah right away. The mitzvah's over. So how can I perform my mitzvah in the perfect way when it comes to the mitzvah of dalad minim on Sukkot? This is the famous kasha of Tosfos, and Tosfos gives three famous answers. Number one, says Tosfos, maybe you should only pick up the lulav, the hadasim, and the aravos, and take the bracha then. You can't be mekayem your mitzvah only with three out of the four minim, so you make the bracha when you're holding three minim, then right away you pick up the esrog. And that won't really be a hefsek, because that's going to be a very quick thing to do, to pick up the esrog after the bracha. That's answer number one. Answer number two, says Tosis, is turn the esrog upside down. Pick everything up, but pick up the esrog upside down. And since you're holding it upside down, therefore you are not going to be mekayem the mitzvah at the time that you pick up the esrog itself. So you can hold the esrog upside down with the other three minim, then you recite the bracha, then you flip it back over, and you are mekayim your mitzvah. And that's what we're going to delve into for a couple of minutes. And number three, says Tosis, you should have kavana shelo latzis. Pick up all the dalad minim. But as you're picking it up, you should have in mind that I do not want to be mekayim my mitzvah right now by picking the dalad minim up. And therefore, you recite the bracha. Only after you recite the bracha are you going to have kavana to be mekayim your mitzvah. There's a big machlokes. Mitzvahs tzrichas kavana, mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavana. It's a huge machlokes in the Gemara Brachas whether you have to have kavana at all when you're performing the mitzvah. So what does it matter that you have kavana shelo latzis? Who said you have to have kavana at all? So that's true. However, the Rishonim say, even if you assume that mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavana, even if you assume that a person does not have to have specific intent, specific kavana when they're performing a mitzvah that they want to actually do the mitzvah that's in front of them, still we would assume that if you have kavana hafachis, if you have kavana shalolatzeis, if I have kavana specifically that I not want to be yotze, then that would invalidate the entire mitzvah that you're trying to do right now. So these are the three eitzes that Tosfos gives. Again, number one, Tosfos says, pick up the lulav with the hadasim and the aravos, leave the esrog on the table, recite the bracha, and then pick up the esrog and do your mitzvah. Number two, Tosfos says, pick up the esrog upside down, make the bracha, then turn the esrog back the right side up. And the third eitzah Tosfos gives is, you should have kavana shelo latzis. Have in mind that you do not want to be mekayim your mitzvah right now when you pick up the lulav and esrog. Then you will make the bracha, and only afterward will you perform the mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the first two. Shulchan Aruch quotes number one, you should pick up only three of the minim and not the esrog. And Shulchan Aruch also writes the second eitzah that you should have the esrog picked up upside down. Why does the Shulchan Aruch not quote the third reason? Tosfos gives a third very good reason, that you should have kavana shelo latzis. Have in mind that you don't want to be yotzei the mitzvah. How come the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bother to quote that? So the Taz and others say the reason why is because, look, the first two reasons that Tosfos gave, first two ideas Tosfos gave are very simple. You're telling someone to actually do a maisa. You're telling someone to do an activity. People will remember to pick the esrog upside down. People will remember to leave the esrog on the table. That's a good idea, to tell people it's a good eitza. However, the third idea that Tosfos said requires a person not to do a maisa, but to think. It's not so easy to expect people to think. So the Acharonim write, the Taz writes, how can you expect everyone in the shul is going to remember to have in mind kavana shelo latzis? You're lucky if they're even having anything in mind. You're lucky if they're having kavana for anything that they're doing. So he says to expect that everyone's going to have in mind that they're not going to be yotzei the mitzvah at the time that they pick up the dalad minim is a little bit unreasonable, and that's why we do not suggest that idea in order to be mekayim this mitzvah over here. When it comes to picking up the lulav and esrog, it's interesting because in Shulchan Aruch, in Uchas Brachos, Siman Reish Vav, it says anytime you pick up something to eat, or when you pick up something to smell and you want to make a barimin and besamim, so it says you have to pick it up, tzarech la'achzo b'yamino kishu mavarech. You have to pick it up in your right hand when you perform the mitzvah. When you're eating something or when you're about to smell something and make a barimin and besamim, you have to pick it up in your right hand. It's a major shaila on Havdalah. What do you do when it comes to Havdalah? When you're holding the Kiddush cup in your right hand, and now you're going to have to pick up the Besamim and make a bracha on it. Some people switch hands. My father does not switch hands, because the Vilna Gaon writes in brachas that it's clear that you shouldn't switch hands. That's a big discussion, but basically the premise of that whole discussion is that maybe, without any time you're performing a mitzvah, you should pick it up with your right hand. Why? Because the right hand is, the tzad yamin is always more chashuv. The tzad yamin, the right side, is always more important. And that's why the Gemara says in Sukkah daf lamed zayin, that when a person is about to go and perform the mitzvah of dalad minim, which should I go ahead and pick up with my right hand? On the one hand, the esrog is the hallmark of the whole mitzvah. The esrog is the most beautiful thing. It's the pre-eitz other. Maybe I should pick that up. Esrog reminds us of the Talmid Chachamim. On the other hand, maybe I should pick up the lulav with the right hand, because the lulav is holding not only the lulav, it's holding the hadassim and the arabas. So the Gemara says, because the lulav holds the hadassim and the arabas, because it has three mitzvahs together, therefore we should go ahead and pick up the lulav in the right hand, instead of picking up the esrog in the right hand. And in fact, the Chayyadim writes that you should also pick up the lulav first. When you're picking up the lulav and the esrog, you should first pick up the lulav, because that has three mitzvahs in it. And you should later pick up the esrog, because the esrog is only one mitzvah. So the Magen Avraham points out, if we have this concept, v'kala Torah kula, that you're always supposed to do a mitzvah with your right hand, so then why is it that the Gemara goes into a whole discussion over here specifically, which one should you pick up with your right hand? Why is it more of a chiddush over here than it would be any other place? So the Magen Avraham points out, maybe the Gemara's discussion is, over here it should be different, because of course when you're being mekayim your actual mitzvah, of course when you're making the bracha on the lulav and esrog, of course you pick it up with your right hand. Of course you're going to take the one that has three mitzvahs. But the question is, what about when I'm not doing my actual mitzvah? What about when I'm doing the hoshanos later in davening? That's not really part of my ikur mitzvah. That's a later stage of the mitzvah. So do I have to make sure to hold my lulav in the right hand then also, and the esrog in the left hand? Or is it no? Only when I'm performing my mitzvah, when I make my bracha, that's the only time that I need to have this calculation, this configuration of having the lulav b'yamin and the esrog b'smol. But later on, when I'm doing the hoshanos, I could do it as I please. It will make a major difference, because nowadays we do hoshanos and we all walk around the shul, and everyone's trying to hold a siddur together with holding your lulav and your esrog, and your kid is jumping on you also. So you're trying to juggle everything, and it's not so easy. So how do you do it? So most people hold the lulav and esrog in one hand, and you hold the siddur in the other hand. The Magen Avraham says that not only do you have to hold the lulav in the right hand and the esrog in the left hand when you're actually performing your mitzvah per se, but the Magen Avraham says also you have to hold it in your left hand and right hand when you're doing the mitzvah of hoshanos as well. And therefore it would make sense for us to try and be careful to have that distinction when we have the going around of hoshanos as well. That's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes as well in Tafresh Nun Dalid, that a person should try his best to do the lulav in the right hand, esrog in the left hand, even while performing the mitzvah of hoshanos later on in the davening. Yeah.
That you're eating also, that you have to make the bracha while you're eating, you should try to make sure.
So I'm not sure, because the Magen Avraham here, I don't think so. I think that's exactly what the Magen Avraham is pointing out. Meaning we have halacha, whenever you make a bracha, you should do it with your right hand. So says the Magen Avraham. So then it's obvious over here, when you make your bracha, do it with the right hand. Why does the Gemara have to go into discussion specifically over here? What's Rabba's Chiddush that you have to hold it in your right hand? We know you have to hold it in your right hand, the same way you have to hold every other item, mitzvah item, in your right hand. Says the Magen Avraham, no, over here there's a bigger Chiddush, that even after you recite the bracha, even after you're no longer doing the real Ikara mitzvah, you still have to do it in your right hand. I think that's what he's contrasting. Right, Masha'en came by every other case, meaning the Gemara only says it over here. So he says that's because over here we want to tell you to highlight the fact that you should do it during Hoshanos as well. I think that's what the Magen Avraham is getting at. You can look it up. Magen Avraham is in Tuf Resh Nun Aleph Zivkat and Vav. If you want to look it up later, that's where he is. And then the Mishnah Berurah quotes that La'alacha in Tuf Resh Nun Dalid as well. I think the Shulchan Aruch HaRab says also we have to be careful about this, to try our best when we're going around with the Hoshanos also, not to put them both in the same hand. And that's why it's very nice that nowadays we have all sorts of different people who send out wonderful things in the mail that just give us a Hoshanos card. It's very helpful. Meaning, the reason why it's helpful is really because you're supposed to figure out how to hold your lulav in the right hand, esrog in the left hand, and hold a siddur at the same time. It's not so simple. So now, let's get back to this idea that Tosis said. Tosis has this principle that we should try our best to, the Gemara says, over lasiyasan, we always have to make sure to make the bracha before we perform a mitzvah. So Tosa says, mida'agbe nafikbe, right away when I pick up my dalad minim, I'm mekayim the mitzvah right away. So how am I going to go ahead and perform the mitzvah of dalad minim with reciting the bracha before I do so? So Tosa gave a middle etza, the middle idea that Tosa gave, yeah?
I just don't understand the difference, the comparison between Right.
You looked up the Magen Avraham?
No,
okay, yeah.
Why would it be similar to the Tosfos? I mean, the kind of rule of, if the picking up is the mitzvah right away,
right,
then the step before that might be allowed to not have it in your hand.
Pick right.
Mitzvah. As opposed to like talus. Talus is supposed to be over your head, so that's why you have to hold it over your head. What's the comparison?
Right, so you're saying
all these other mitzvahs have to be at the stage is not picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
So we will just keep picking it up and putting it down on the table is not
right. Right, so that's Tosa's first answer. Tosa's first answer is you're right. There's a major difference between this mitzvah and every other mitzvah. Since this mitzvah is to pick it up, so therefore by this mitzvah it's not a violation of Ovelas Yosin if you leave it on the table. That's Tosa's first answer. Just leave the Esrog on the table. Meaning you always want to minimize the amount of hefsik in between the bracha and the mitzvah. So Tosa says, so pick up the lulav, leave the esrog on the table, and then you can do your mitzvah. That's exactly what Tosa is answering. Now Tosa's second answer is, you should go ahead and pick it up upside down. Where does the upside down idea come from? So the idea comes from the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Memhei. Zok the Gemara. Amar Chizkiya, pay attention. Amar Chizkiya, Amar B'yimri Yemeshivim Shimon Yochai. Kol ha-mitzvos kulon ein adam yotze ela derech gedilasan. Whenever a person performs a mitzvah, you have to make sure to do it Derech Gidi Lasan, which means the way that it naturally grows. Shanemar, how do we know this halacha? Where do we learn it from? Because the pasuk says, Atse Shitim Omdim. What is that? That's by the Krushim. It's by the Krushim of the Mishkan. You have to have Atse Shitim Omdim. And what does the Gemara learn from there? That Atse Shitim Omdim, Rashi explains, it means that you have to have the pillars standing up in the Beis HaMikdash erected the same way that they grew. You can't have them going horizontal, they have to be vertical, they always have to be face up. Why? Because that's the way they grew, so that's the only way you can be mekayim the mitzvah of erecting a mishkan. That's what the Gemara learns. You always have to have over lasiyasa. Number two, says the Gemara, atse shitim omdim means davar acher shemamidim es tzipuyam. It means that you're going to have these beautiful krushim that you're going to put up in the Beis HaMikdash, in the mishkan. However, you're going to put a beautiful garnishing on the outside of it. You're going to put a golden layer of whatever it is, of covering on top of this wood. So the Gemara says it has to be strong enough that it can hold up the tzipuy. It has to be mamidim es tzipuyam. The wood has to be strong enough that it can hold up all the gold coverings that you're going to put on top of the krushim as well. And then number three, zakti Gemara davar acher. What does it mean? Atse shitim omdim. Shema tomar. Maybe you'll say avad sivra mubatal sichuyam. Maybe you'll say that after the Beis HaMikdash, after the Mishkan was destroyed, we no longer have the krushim. Says the Gemara, no. Talmud lomar atse shitim omdim. That these krushim are going to be standing, are going to be everlasting. She omdim laolme ulaolme olamim. This is something that is going to last forever and ever, and it's never going to be eradicated from the world. That's what the Gemara learns from this pasuk, Atzi Shitim Omdim, three different halachas. So the first halacha that we learn from here is that you always have to have something performed by a mitzvah, Derech Kedilasan. It always has to be used exactly the way that it grew. So the Bahag and other Rishonim write that nobody in the Gemara is arguing. Yes, the Gemara makes three drushas. What do we learn from the pasuk, Atzi Shitim Omdim? But everyone agrees that we need Derech Kedilasan. Everyone agrees to all three. Just the question is, which one is the simplest mashmos of the pasuk? But the Mordechai writes that everyone will agree that Atzi Shitim Omdim, that you have to have Derech Kedilasan. That's not a question, that's not a machlokis at all. Now, it's a major question. How far should we take this halacha of Atzi Shitim Omdim? How far do we take the din that you need to have something Derech Kedilasan? So you look in Rashi, fascinating diak in Rashi. Listen carefully. What does Rashi say on that sugya? When do you have to have Derech Kedilasan? Kigon, for example, Karshe HaMishkan, when you're erecting a Mishkan, you have to make sure that the poles are going to be Derech Kedilasan. Amudim, Velulav, Vehadas, Vearava. Notice, anybody? No Esrog. Ein Adam Yotze Elach Derech Kedilasan. A person, when performing the mitzvah of Lulav, Hadas, and Arava, has to make sure that you hold them up Derech Kedilasan. Hatachto Namata, Vehaelyo Namala. So some Achronim are Medayik. Why does Rashi leave out the Esrog? Blatant omission. Why does Rashi leave out the Esrog? Why doesn't Rashi say that when you're doing the mitzvah of Dalad Minim, you have to make sure that the Esrog is also held Derech Kedilasan, the same way you have to have the Lulav, the Hadassim, and the Aravas? Why does he leave that out? So Rav Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna wants to be Mechadesh. Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna was already in the second half of the 1800s, so it's a pretty old Chiddush. So Rav Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna has a Chiddush where he says as follows. You want to know why Rashi leaves out Esrog? It's because by Esrog, we don't care about Derech Kedilasan. Why? Because think about it. How does an esrog grow? When an esrog starts growing, it grows upright. Then when it gets too heavy, it turns upside down. So what's the Derech Kedilasan? What's the right way to hold an esrog? It's not really clear. because it grows both directions. At one point in its life, it grows one way, and then when it gets too heavy, when it gets too big, it starts growing upside down. So therefore, says the Cheshek Shlomo, this is Reb Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna's Chiddush, we should say that by Esrog, we're not makbid on Derech Kedilasan, because we don't even know which way is the right way to hold it. That's the Chiddush that he wants to say. And in fact, the Aderus writes the same thing, that we have to assume that Rashi is Medayik in his Lashon here, and he only says Lulav, Hadasim, and Arabis, he leaves out Esrog. Why is that? Because Rashi would assume that Esrog would not be the same as everything else. Everything else grows on a tree in one direction, so you have to hold it in that direction. But an Esrog which grows in both directions, there would be no Kpeda of Derech Kedilasan there. Now, obviously, this is in stark contrast to what Tosa says. Again, Tosa says, how are we going to make sure to make a bracha over Lasiyas and then still perform the mitzvah of Dalad Minim afterward? Tosa says, flip the Esrog upside down. Well, according to the Aderus Chiddush with Rashi, according to what we're saying now, there's no way to flip it upside down because there is no upside down. Esrog would never be a problem of having it being held upside down. So that's obviously a major problem. More than that, the Sefer HaManig, as quoted in the Bikur Yaakov is the Aruch Laner Sefer, all about Hilchos Dalad Minim. So he quotes the Sefer HaManik. Sefer HaManik was one of the Rishonim. So he says, Dalad Minim Shebelulav. Dalad Minim Shebelulav means all four of them. Ein Yotzimam Yidei Chavasan Ela Derech Yididasan. So obviously he's holding not like this Diuk and Rashi. Tosis himself obviously holds not like the Diuk and Rashi. V'osam Pisayim. And those fools, says the Sefer HaManik. Shalokhem HaEsrog Chotma Lamata V'Uktza Lamala. Those fools who hold the Esrog upside down because they say, well, this is the way it grows on the tree. He says, "Ubodim elimam shukaderach shuutale beilan enem yotzim idei chavasan." I got bad news for you. I want you to know, says the Sefer HaManig, as quoted by the Aruch Laner, I want you to know you're not mekayem your mitzvah. It's a great chiddush that you want to come up with. It's brilliant that, oh, it grows upside down, so why don't we hold it upside down? No. He says, obviously, you're not going to be mekayem your mitzvah because we hold derech kedilasa means you have to hold it upright. And if you don't hold it upright, you're not mekayem the mitzvah at all. The Stechemet himself quotes that Rashi writes in the Sefer HaOra, say for her, Ura, I don't know exactly how you say it, but Rashi himself writes in one of his other Svarim, not in his Pirush on Shas, Rashi himself writes the Esrog is part of it all as well. So the Stechemet says, I don't like this whole Chiddush, this whole Diyuk of Reb Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna, and really Rashi was just not Medayik in his Lashon. She means to say, the Lulav, the Esrog, the Hadassim, the Aravos, everything, but I don't have to spell it out. Okay, you know, those of us who learned in yeshivas, you know, maybe the Stechemet learned in another kind of yeshiva, but those of us are careful, always Medayik in every word of Rashi, it seems to me like it's a glaring omission that Rashi leaves it out. Just to say that Rashi is Lav Dafka, I don't know. You have to come up with some shot. The Ramah, even in terms of the Lulav itself, the Ramah writes also, what about when you have the Nanuim? So you're supposed to do in front, back, all around, and then you do up and down. So how do you do the down? So there are some people who take the Lulav and they go like this, right? They point it down. Correct? Anyone ever seen that? It's like it reminds me, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I was looking around, I don't know why, but I was looking more at the women's section during Birchas Kohanim, and I saw all the women turning around, backs to the Kohanim. You're not Mekayim the Mitzvah Birchas Kohanim if you turn your back to the Kohen. People don't realize this. When it says you shouldn't be Mistakel B'Yadav Shel HaKohanim, it means don't look at the Kohanim, doesn't mean you should turn around. If you turn around, then you're excluding yourself from the whole Mitzvah Birchas Kohanim. I'm going to say this year, if you think it goes over well, I'm going to say this year tomorrow, thinking about whether or not I should say this in the shir will be a little too touchy for people. But anyway, it's something to think about. So when you have the Nanuim also, and you go down in the Nanuim, some people take the Lulav and Esrog and they point it down. Says the Ramah, I'm not sure if you're Mekayim the Mitzvah when you do it in the downward fashion. Why? Because now that's not Derech Kedilasan. You're taking the Lulav and Esrog, you're turning it inside out, upside down. Now, what do the rest of us do? Okay, so we know not to turn it upside down 2 days in the Ramah. We're not going to get involved in that. Now, what about the rest of us? So most of us go like this, right? We shake it out. No? But imagine you do it sideways. When you're going in front of you, you go sideways. Is that correct? So the Mishnah Berurah has a suffix. Who said that sideways is considered Derech Kedilasan? Maybe sideways is also not Derech Kedilasan. The tree doesn't grow sideways, the tree goes straight up. The lulav grows straight up, so who said you're allowed to go like this? So I never understood. I'm 29 years old. 29 years I'm spending Sukkos with my father. I never understood. My father is the type who never tells us why he does things. If you figure it out, you figure it out. If you don't, it's too bad. So my father, I never understood it. We were always the weird people in shul. When my father, I was so embarrassed. Every time he would shake lulav, he goes like this. When he's shaking in front of him, he doesn't point the lulav and esrog toward the front. He shakes straight. He just pushes his hands forward. When he goes behind him, he just goes like this. He doesn't throw it behind him like that. I never understood it. How come when he's going the different directions, why doesn't he put the lulav and esrog in each direction the same way everyone else in shul does it? So now I understand. Why? Because the Mishnah Berurah has a suffix. I finally saw the Mishnah Berurah. Now I asked him, is that why you do it? He said, yeah, of course. Don't you know that? I'm Amaretz. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm an Amaretz. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, yeah, because it's not clear when you do a b'shchiva, if you do it in a position which is not the way that it grows, if you put it sideways, so you might not be mekayim the mitzvah of derech kedilason either. So how can you go ahead and shake the lulav sideways in front of you or sideways to the side of you? You're not going to be mekayim the mitzvah. The same way the Rama says you shouldn't turn the lulav upside down when you're shaking down, so too you shouldn't turn the lulav sideways when you're shaking it in all the directions. So this is something to be careful about as well. The Bikur Yaakov, in fact, has another suffix, which to me is fascinating. I mean, it's like shocking that he even has such a serious suffix. But he says, well, how about the people who live in Europe? I don't know exactly where the other side of the world is from Europe. Anybody know? Australia, let's say, for argument's sake. Probably not, but let's assume. Let's say. So the Bikur Yaakov has a suffix. Am I allowed to use an esrog that grew in Australia if I'm living in Europe? Why? Because we know the earth is round, and if you have an esrog that's growing on the other side of the world, so if I'm going to pick it up in this side of the world, so it's going to be upside down from the way it grew. Like, what does that mean? What do you mean? All the esrogim grow on the tree in the same direction. It's just you happen to be in a different part of the world where it grew the other way, because the laws of nature dictate as such that... I don't know. So that's an interesting suffix that I found as well in the Aruch HaNer in his Bikur Yaakov, which he actually considers pretty seriously. To me, it was a big chiddush. Anyway, so that's in terms of some of the halacha about derech kedilason. So again, what Tosa says about making sure that you have the lulav, making sure you have the esrog all upright, and making sure you turn it upside down, it's not so simple. Number one, we have a diuk in Rashi that maybe what Tosa says is not so pashut. And number two, maybe there's what to talk about in many different areas when it comes to derech kedilason. How to be mekayim that mitzvah is not such a simple idea. It's not such a simple thing to do. Yeah?
This is all assuming the non-new women, all the pshat, and everything's a mitzvah by itself.
Even not. The Magen Avraham says over here.
Unless you're holding up the Magen Avraham, which the Gemara quoted, you said, right?
I mean, everyone agrees. The Gemara says that Nanuim is a Shiari mitzvah, whether you hold it's a separate mitzvah or not. But everyone agrees it's part of the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, right? It's part of the mitzvah of Shaking Lulav.
That would also need to be done Derech.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So I was just thinking, Al Derech Hadrash, maybe just to end off the Shir like this. You know, we had a Gemara that we began with where the Gemara says that we learn three things from Atzei Shitim Omdim. Number one, the Gemara learns that on the Miyotze Yidei Chavoso Ela Derech Kedilaso. And I was thinking, when you read that Gemara about Atzei Shitim Omdim, we know that the Pasuk says, Ki Adam Eitz HaSadeh, that a person is very often compared to Eitz HaSadeh. So perhaps when our Gemara over here talks about Atzei Shitim Omdim, when it talks about those Eitzim, maybe there's some sort of reference for us as well that has some significance to the way we are mekayim our own mitzvahs. And what I mean by that is as follows. And the Gemara learns first from this pasuk that everything has to be done derech kedilason. You know, I once read a story from Rav Pam. Rav Pam was the Rosh Hashiva in Torah Vadas, and one of his Talmidim wrote the following story. Rabbi Smith, who was one of his very close Talmidim, wrote some of the English books from Rav Pam. Torah said that the pasuk writes by the Luchos, that the Luchos were mizeh u'mizeh heim ksuvim. Didn't matter which side you looked at them from, up, down, inside, out, wherever you look from them, that's the you were able to read through the ksav on the luchos. They were written in all different directions. So Rav Pam suggested, after he heard a Talmud came to once talk to him, and he said, you know, I'm about to get involved in a business deal. I'm about to do this and that and whatever it was. And Rebbe, you know, I'm going to make millions of dollars. I'm going to support the yeshiva. I'm going to do this, whatever. Whenever I am successful in accomplishing this deal, I'm going to give all the money to tzedakah. Everything's going to be wonderful. And Rav Pam said to him, is that really honest? Like, something about it sounds like it's not legal. Something about it sounds wrong. The guy said, no, listen to this loophole. I chopped the government on this technicality and that thing. I'm going to sign this contract before I do that. I'm going to make a deal with him and the other one, borrow money from the other guy, going to pay back the loans and whatever it is. He made a whole calculation to figure out how everything he was doing was absolutely legal and there was nothing to be concerned about at all. Said Rav Pam, it's very nice that you come up with all these strategies, all these ideas, he said, but you can take other midreita hin midreita her, by the luchos it says, mizel mizel hin ksuvim. You can turn them inside out, upside down, on top of their heads, but it still says lo signo. Doesn't matter how many kinds of haramas you come up with, how many different ways of shortcuts, of trying to buck the system, of trying to bypass what it says, in the end of the day, mizel mizel hin ksuvim means that the Torah tells you there's a way that you're supposed to be mekayim the mitzvahs, there's a way you're supposed to perform different activities in your life, and you're not following that. So I was thinking, perhaps, along the lines of what Rav Pam said, that's lesson number one that the Gemara teaches us. That mizeh u'mizeh hem ksuvim also is the idea that you have to be mekayim the mitzvahs derech kedilason. How often do we have people who are mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah, and they say, well, the Gemara says, holchei drachim are patur min ha-sukkah, so I may as well go to the amusement park that doesn't have a sukkah, and then I'm going to be patur because I'm a holchei drachim. Is that what the Torah really meant? Holchei drachim means you're busy going to a dvar mitzvah. I'm going to do pidyon shvuim, like the Gemara says, and oy, nebuch, it takes me 6 months to get there on the boat, but I'm trying to do a dvar mitzvah anyway, so holchei drachim are patur min ha-sukkah. Does holchei drachim mean that we have a right to go to an amusement park when we know we're not going to be mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah? And yes, it might be true, you might not be mechuyev because you happen to be holchei drachim now, but is that really what God wants from you? Or, for example, you have people who eat a whole meal, and they're having 5 courses in the meal with desserts and everything, and they say, oh, we don't have to eat in the sukkah. Why? Because we're not washing. We're not having mezonos. We'll make sure not to make mezonos. We'll make sure not to wash. Really? Is that really what God wants from you? And I was telling this chiddush to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, so he said that, he told me that Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein wrote such an idea, that, you know, you have all these kinds of people who decide that they're going to make sure to have a big meal on sukkahs, but no one's going to wash. What do you mean? That's really what the Torah meant? You shouldn't sit in sukkah because you're not washing? Of course you have to sit in sukkah. You're mechuyev to sit in the sukkah. It says, teishu kein tadiru. You're mechuyev to sit in the sukkah all the time, and just because you came up with a loophole and you made sure not to wash and make a mezonos in your meal, doesn't mean that you're patur min ha-sukkah. Doesn't mean you should ignore the mitzvahs that you're mechuyev to do right now. So that's number one, that you have a chiyuv to do the mitzvahs kederach yedilasan. You should do them in the way that they were instructed to us. You should do them without flipping them on their heads, inside out, upside down. Try to be mekayim them as best as possible to the best of your ability. Number two, the Gemara says what we learn from Atzi Shittim Omdim is Shema'amidim Es Tzipuya. You know, we have a mitzvah on Sukkis, V'lakachtam Lachem Priye Tzadar Kapas Tamarim. So everyone's very careful about a hiddur mitzvah on Sukkis, and we all try to find the perfect esrog. I saw a beautiful story in the biography of Rabbi Aryeh Levin, where he writes that he came in on Erev Sukkis to a little shop in Me'e Sha'arim, and he walks into the shop and he asks them, "Nu, can I have a dalad minim? Can I buy a set of lulav and esrog?" So the guy gives him a set quickly, and Rabbi Aryeh Levin takes it, throws the esrog into his pocket, runs out of the store. So it was an old Yerushalmi sitting outside of the store. He says, "I don't understand. Everybody knows you're the great Rabbi Aryeh Levin. And everybody knows that even a young child who comes to buy a lulav and esrog before sukkah is careful to sit there with his magnifying glass, is careful to check the lulav and the esrog and everything to make sure everything's perfect. And you, the heiliger Rabbi Aryeh Levin, you walk in, he gives you an esrog, you trust him, you give him the money, you run out of the store 3 minutes later. You're not even going to check, you're not even going to look into it to make sure that it's a kosher lulav and esrog." So Rabbi Levin said as follows. He said there are two places where the Torah mandates hiddur. One is by the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, where it says, priyei tzadar, you have to make sure always to have a beautiful esrog, you have to really pick out the best of the best. And he said, I feel it's a beautiful thing that people spend a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of money, making sure that they pick out the perfect esrog, everything is going to be the way they want it to be, it should look just right, and everything should be just perfect. That's wonderful. But said Rabbi Levin, there's a second place where it says hiddur as well. And that's by the pasuk v'hadarta p'nei zakin. Rabbi Levin said, I took it upon myself that every Erev Yontif, I'm going to go to the nursing homes when nobody else is taking care of the older gentlemen who are going to be stuck there for Yontif. When no one's caring about them, I took it upon myself to be Mahadir instead of in the Priyetz Hadar. I'm Mahadir all my energy. I expend all of my efforts and all of the time that I have on Erev Yontif instead of going to buy my Esrog. I go and I put it into the other place where the Torah says, V'hadarta p'nei zakin. I make sure that my inside is like my outside. I don't just show off with my Esrog. I make sure that I do acts of Ben Adam Lachavera. I make sure that everything that I do is very carefully weighted, and that I give equal attention to the Bein Adam L'Chaver that I do to the Bein Adam L'Makom as well. Rav Putner writes in the Pachad Yitzchak on Shavuos, so he writes, Vayikach Moshe Chatzi Adam, we're told in Parshas Mishpatim that Moshe Rabbeinu takes half of the blood and he puts it onto the Mizbeach, and the other half of the blood he puts it on the Jewish people. So Rav Putner writes a drasha there where he suggests that when a person has the avoda in front of him, a person has to make sure to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says you have to put the exact same measurement of dam on the Mizbeach, the same way it's important for us to sprinkle the blood on the Mizbeach and to offer karbanos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same amount of blood has to be put also, the same emphasis has to be put on the am, on the Jewish people. You have to make sure your Ben Adam L'Chaveru is exactly congruous with your Ben Adam L'Makom. Everything has to be exactly equal, everything has to be, all the energies have to be spent equally, split amongst the two. I did see Rabbi Yisrael Salanter has Pesach, once we're going through all the Yom Tovim. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, they say, was always very careful to make sure that his matzahs were baked behidurab. He was always very careful. So he had a bunch of Talmidim who used to bake matzahs with. One of the Talmidim was leaving the yeshiva and going to move out to his own town to get his own position. So he asked Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you know, I know we always went to bake the matzahs together, but tell me, now next year I'm going to have to bake the matzahs on my own. What's the most important hiddur? If I can't get all the hiddurim in with my new matzah bakery over there in my new town, what's the most important hiddur that you think I should be careful about while I bake the matzahs? Said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you know what the most important hiddur is? Make sure that when the woman comes to sweep the floors And she's sitting there and cleaning up after you. Make sure you say good morning to her. Make sure you give her a drink. Make sure you're kind to her. Make sure you're respectful to her. That's the greatest hiddur mitzvah you can have in your matzahs. It's very nice that we all want to make sure that we have the pre-etzadr, that we have the most mehudadika matzahs, that we have all the wonderful things that we do. But where is the ma'amidim es tzipuyon? The Gemara says we have to uphold all of that tzipuy that's outside of us. Yes, it's very nice we have the golden Chanukah menorah, and we have the beautiful ka'ara, and we have all the beautiful things that we use throughout all the Yom Tovim, and that's all the beautiful hiddur mitzvah, but what about the Vahadarta Pnei Zaken? What is Ma'amidim Es Tzipuyon? What upholds all the mitzvahs that we're performing? Who is the person that stands behind all of this incredible tzipuy that we put up as a facade in front of ourselves? Are we really what we ought to be? Are we really living up to the standard that we should be living? I remember the Rav writes, I did see that a great story about Rav Matal Katz, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Tells in Cleveland. So he said that he was once on an airplane, and an irreligious Jew, of course, you know, it only happens to these kinds of people, an irreligious Jew taps him on the shoulder in the middle of the plane, and he says to him, you know, what's with all these Orthodox Jews who cheat on their income taxes? Like, what's the story? Why are they always getting arrested? What's the deal? So he said back to him, Rav Matal Katz said back to this irreligious Jew, he said, you know, I ask you a question. He says, yeah, what's with all the Orthodox Jews who eat on Yom Kippur and who drive to Shul on Shabbos? Like, what's the story with them? So the guy says back to him, well, they're not really Orthodox. What do you mean? They eat on Yom Kippur and they drive to shul. Well, Rav Matal Katz said, well, those who cheat on taxes aren't Orthodox either. Doesn't matter that they look Orthodox on the outside, but they're not. If you don't understand that you have to have that exact perfect balance between the one hand having that idea of Ayizrak Moshe as Adam ala Mizbeach, Moshe Rabbeinu takes half the blood and he spends it on the Mizbeach, Makriv Karbanos Benon LaMakom, but at the same time you need the Menon LaChaver. What stands behind all of our Judaism? What stands behind all the Menhagim that we do? What kind of people are we really? This is what the Rav writes in The Lonely Man of Faith. I was always taken by this idea. The Rav writes that there was Adam 1 and Adam 2. That's his Lashon that he says. So, when Adam Rishon was created, he had two different Tafkidim, he had two different purposes in the world. The Lashon that he uses is, Adam 1, what's the idea, says the Rav? The human person as a creator, as a builder, as a master of nature, imposing his or her will on the world. Which means, God put me in charge of the world that I have a right to be Mishana, that I have a right to decide the way everything's going to perform itself. Adam Rishon gave the name to all the animals. Why? Because he was able to impose his master of nature on the world. And Adam 2 is the covenantal personality, living in obedience to the transcendent truth. I don't know what these words mean, but I think what the Rav means to say is that there's an Adam 1 and an Adam 2, that we have, sometimes, we have a certain personality that we show on the outside, and we have that idea of Hiddur Mitzvah, like Rabbi Levine taught us, of Priyei Tzadr. We're all very careful about that, but what about the Adam 2? What about the other person, the interior? What about the Ma'amidim Es Tzipuyim? What upholds all the beautiful garnishings that we have on the outside and the exterior of our performance of mitzvahs? And number 3, the Gemara says over here, Atzei Shitim Omdim, we learn, Shekayamim La'ad Ula'olnei Olam. The Gemara learns from here that these are something, the walls, the krushim of the Mishkan are something that lasts forever and ever. And perhaps along the lines of what we're saying, we have to understand, number 1, when we're mekayim a mitzvah, even the most simple act in the world, when we're mekayim a mitzvah, we should remind ourselves that it's kayim la'ad ola'om me'olam. The schar that we are going to get for that mitzvah is something which is eternal, it's something which is everlasting, it's something which will never, which will be always enduring, it's something which we will never run out of. And not only that, but also, I saw the Ber Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant, writes in his drushas on Chumash. He has a beautiful insight when it comes to Purim. So I think we spoke about Shavuos, Pesach, Chanukah, now let's get to Purim. So it says over there that by Mordechai and Esther, Ladas Malzeh Ve'al Mazeh. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, Ladas Malzeh Ve'al Mazeh? The Gemara darshins, maybe the reason why all these terrible things are happening to the Jewish people is because they're violating the mitzvah HaTorah, Shekasuvah Mizeh Mizeh Hem Ksuvah. That's what the Gemara learns. That's what it means. Ladas Malzeh Ve'al Malzeh is really a reference to Mizeh Mizeh Hem Ksuvim. That's what the Gemara learns from there. So ultimately, the Gemara says, why did all of this happen? Shenanu Misudas Achashverosh. So ask the Ber Yosef. I don't understand. What's the worst case scenario? Shenanu Misudas Achashverosh. What do you think they were serving there? Chazer Treif? Of course not. Achashverosh knows to accommodate the Jews. So what was happening there? What was happening? Bishul Akum? Like, how bad could the Aveira have been? Bishul Akum, Pasakum, Stam Yenam, maybe, right? Like, how bad was the Avera? At worst, there was an Issur Derabanan that they were violating. At worst, if that. So what were we concerned about? Why is that a reason to destroy the Jewish people? And not only that, as Rabbi Yosef Salant, he says, I don't understand. Even if you say that they were violating these Issur Derabanan, but it says only in Sudas HaChashverosh they did it. What do you mean? If the Jews were such Erlich Yidin in their own homes, if everyone was so Makbet on Pas Yisrael, Chalav Yisrael, Pasakum, everything in their own house, so then how come all of a sudden they come to HaChashverosh's palace and they forget about everything? What's the story? Says Rabbi Yosef Salant, the idea is like this. Klal Yisrael is now in Galus. They're found in Galus in Persia, and they don't know what to do. They're being oppressed. So they say, nah, the Torah wasn't meant to govern, to dictate how we're supposed to live here. The Torah was meant to tell us how to live when we're living in Eretz Yisrael, when we have our own government, when we have our own melech, when we're doing our own thing. That's when the laws of the Torah were kayam. Now that we're living under the rulership of a non-Jewish king, obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't expect us to keep the Torah here. He didn't give it to us to keep under the rulership of Achashverosh, and therefore they were nana misudas Achashverosh. Of course, in our own homes we're going to make sure to keep all the halachas because that's our own jurisdiction, that's our own domain. But what happens when we go to Achashverosh's palace? The Torah wasn't meant to govern us there outside in the outside world. It can't be. It can't be. And that's what the Gemara makes reference to over here. Mizeh u'mizehim k'suvim. They forgot the idea that the Torah was written from all directions, from all sides, that it doesn't matter where you find yourself in the world, doesn't matter at what generation, at what period in history you're in, the Torah is something that's applicable to you wherever you find yourself, and in every generation, in every situation. It's not something that we keep only in the privacy of our own homes. It's not something that we do only under certain conditions. It's something that we have to perform at any time in our lives, at every situation in our lives, and it's something we always have to keep to. That's what the Gemara means. It's not specifically that they were nana misudas Achashverosh and they weren't careful about Bishulakim. That's not a good enough reason to destroy the Jewish people. The reason why they were punished is because they forgot about this important concept that the laws of the Torah are kayam la'ad ul'omi olam. The laws of the Torah are something that are kayam, that exist forever and ever. They're enduring, they're everlasting, they're something that will never go away. And perhaps maybe this is the idea that the Rambam writes, even though La Asad Lava Kol Sivri HaTanach are going to be batil, Megillas Esther won't be batil. Why? Perhaps this is the reason. Because Megillas Esther is what taught us that lesson, that it's Mizeh Mizehim K'suvim, that the Torah is something that's supposed to be kept in every generation, and in every circumstance, in every situation, wherever we might be in any gullus. And therefore, perhaps that's why, when it comes to Megillas Esther, we assume that that's something that will never be batil, because it's Kaim La'ad Olmi Olam. That message is something that we always have to take with us all the time. So perhaps, when we learn this Gemara about this importance of Derek and Ilasan, when we learn the Gemara that has all the different halachos about Atzeshitim Omdim, it's a time for us to think about our own performance of our own Hiddur Mitzvah. It's a time for us to consider how good are we at our Chatzi Adam Al HaMizbeach, and how careful are we about the Vahadarta B'nei Zaken, about the Chatzi Adam that's Al HaAm as well. It's something, I think Chag HaSukkos is not only about the Hiddur Mitzvah on the one hand in our performance Bein Adam LaMokom, but it's also a time to think about the performance by Adam Machadero as well. Wish everyone a good night.